We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see these pages, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that we will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is a special person to me. A little over 2 years ago, I came into a meeting. Claude was a discussion leader, and I needed to pick up a white chip. I had raised my hand to share, and Claude told me with a lot of compassion and a lot of sensitivity to sit in my seat, be quiet, do not talk, and chill out. And that's what I needed to hear at that point in time. You know, he's always had kind of a General Patton philosophy towards recovery. Be a warrior in this program. And that's something I admire, and I enjoy hearing it when he shares. I've looked forward to this evening, and I welcome him. And without further ado, I give you Claude.
Oh, Lord. I'm Claude, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. It's a privilege to be here. How many people here has got less than 6 months sobriety? Wow. This is what it's all about. It's about you. I was born on July the 11th, 1943, into a loving, caring home. My grandmother, my mother, my aunt, my one uncle that couldn't go to World War II. And for 8 years, I lived with them. And it was nothing but happiness, nothing but love, and not one beer could ever be found around that house all that time. And this is how it started. 1945, I met my dad for the first time. He came in through the front door drunk, because he got out of World War II, screaming and cussing and all this stuff, and I didn't like him for nothing. A few years later, he decided he was going to take Mom and go up to Chicago and make this fortune, get off the sharecroppers. And my grandmother told him, so I think I better keep Dickie here, and that was my nickname, until you get established up there, because she knew exactly what was going to happen. And 8 years old, we moved to Chicago, all of us, and it was the most devastating thing that ever happened to me in my life. I was never felt with, never felt loved, never fit in, and went through drastic, just total hell in my mind. Till 13 years old, went to the refrigerator one Sunday morning, they were all passed out all over the house, and I got me a couple of beers. Went out to the garage, proceeded to drink them. They were good. I can tell you to this day, that's the most awful stuff I ever put in my mouth. All of a sudden, next thing I know, I'm running down the streets and I'm doing this, doing that. My dad came up, chased me down, brought me home. And for the first time, he didn't beat the crap out of me for doing something. And he put me in bed. And my mother said, what's wrong with him? Oh, he's just got drunk. And that's all that was said. And I just knew I was dead when I woke up, but I didn't. He never said a word after that. That was my first introduction to alcohol. As the years went past, I started trying a little bit more, a little bit more. Got into school, high school, and met a couple of guys who were seniors. They were on a football team, big, bad, and ugly, and that's what I wanted to be like. They really introduced me how you could drink, how you take care of yourself. So at the ripe age of 16, I was already drinking like an alcoholic because I loved what the feeling it gave me when I did drink. 17 was another disastrous year. I got involved with some people I shouldn't have got involved with. And when I learned a whole new way of life because I was accepted with them. They were from Italian accent. But I loved the way their families were all together. Grandpa being there making the sausages and the red wine, and all of us would be at the tables playing penny poker, drinking this red wine, and man, I just loved it to death. I never cared too much about people. I thought the world was against me, and I had to really start taking care of myself. I met a man who was in the head of this organization, and we're not going to go too far into that, but he promised me a job if I wanted one. 17 years old, I was wearing silk pants, silk shirts, black patent leather shoes, black hair, you can just about get the idea. And we'd go around the bars, Big Herman and I'd drive the car, and Herman would go into these bars, and he'd pick up these football tickets, the collection on Tuesday. And he'd always carry a half pint with him, and we'd take a couple of slugs and say, you're going to need this. And I could see why. If they didn't pay up, some things happened that wasn't very nice. And I had to drink just to drive this guy around to do this shit, you know. But I was, you know, I fit in. I mean, they had exactly what I wanted. I wanted the fast lane highway, the cheapest way, the quickest way I could get there. I wanted more money, more women, and more cars, and more clothes. And that's how I could get it. Never finished high school, quit 10th and a half grade, something like that. Went into the Navy because when I went out to get out of this mess up there in Chicago, my buddy told me, so we need to come back in about a week. We just don't let people just come in and just walk away. And I was scared to death. But the reason why I had to get out, my mother found a .38 in my pocket one night and told me I couldn't live in that house anymore if I carried something like that. So my buddy said, I went back in a week, and he said, Smitty, he said, we're gonna let you do what you need to do, but you're going to have to leave town for a while. Well, little did he know, I had just joined the United States Navy that morning, and I was headed for San Diego. And I said, would San Diego be far enough? And he said, that'd work out perfect. And he handed me an envelope, and it was $2,500 cash and three business cards with his name and phone number on it. And he told me, he said, at any time, anywhere you need a problem, have a problem, you call this number. Well, thank God I never needed it. But see, this is what I always want. I want people to be able to take care of me, because I could not take care of myself. And I didn't even know that at this time, see. So I got in the Navy, went through their boot camp, and then somebody mentioned the Marine Corps. I'll go. I just see me in a green beret, John Wayne walking down, you know, with all the women on him. Well, it didn't work out like that either, so I stayed drunk most of my military life. Got out, met this fine young lady, and I decided that she deserved me, so we got married. It's a funny thing, it lasted 23 years, and for what reason we ever got married in the first place, I'll never know, but we did, and she raised three children, because I went into the trucking business. And I was coast to coast, made all the money I wanted to make. Allowed me to buy the things I wanted to buy. Allowed me to take care of my kids and my wife the way I wanted to. And continuously just drinking. Now, over-the-road truck driver, it's a lonely job, I can tell you that. All you have is you and the steering wheel and that windshield to think about all the crap that's going on. I never knew that I was drinking alcoholically, but every time I drank, I felt more important. More things could happen. 27 DUIs later, I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars across the United States paying off judges, cops, lawyers, whatever it took. Never lost a driver's license or anything like this. I was just one of the fortunate ones. Never killed anybody in a truck. And for that, I've always been blessed. But it got to the point on August the 4th of 1992 at 2:15 in the afternoon, I was going to blow my brains out. I'd had enough. This is my second wife. I was about to file for divorce. My kids no longer wanted to be around me. Alcohol had just taken over. That morning, right down the street here, my buddy who owned the business, and I worked for him, and by this time I got off the road and helping him build his business, I'm walking across the parking lot. And I was walking to a brand new Cadillac, didn't have 100 miles on it, and he had his arm on my shoulder, and he said, Claude, you have got the world by the balls. And the only thought that came in my head at that precise moment was, if you only knew. He didn't know that Vita and I had just separated. Pulled into my regular little Hindu store up here on Buford Highway. Got me three tall, ice-cold Michelob cans that would get me to where I lived in Atworth. I was going up Buford Highway, and I don't know what it was. To this day, I don't know what it was, but all of a sudden, the tears just started coming out of my eyes. I don't know if it's what he said or how I felt. I took a sip of that beer, and something happened. I just threw that beer out the door, out the window. I threw the other two right behind it. It's a wonder I handed it to DeKalb County policeman. But I got home, and I called the wife up and found out she was down at the lawyer's office and had the .38 laying on a coffee table. And had a bar full of liquor. Now, my house never once ever ran out of liquor. I kept looking at it, and I kept looking at it, and I knew I didn't want it, and it was just new. I mean, I'd had my last one. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. And I reached for that gun, and I dropped to my knees for some reason. And I said, God, whatever is in me that's allowing me to destroy people's lives, please take it away. I didn't know then that it was alcohol, but I knew I'd hurt a lot of people over 35 years of drinking. I mean, a lot of people, folks. When I drank, it was like a still water in a bathtub. You drop a marble in and ripple them waves. And I mean, all over this United States, I hurt people because of it. There was never a sentence that came out of my mouth that didn't start with I. And there was never a sentence that didn't end as I want that. Never. All I know is I got up off that floor. It felt like a million pounds been lifted off me. I got off the floor and I called my brother-in-law, Jimmy Barnum, who was the president of NAB at the time, 1992. And he said, well, this is Thursday. We got a dinner tonight. Why don't you come up to the apartment? We'll talk a little bit. Maybe we'll go to dinner together. So we went over there. I went over there and he gave me one of these goofy pamphlets that said 44 questions. And I read about three or four and handed it back to him. And he said, well, they don't relate to you. I said, no. I said, it says one. If you say yes to one, you may have a problem. You say two, you probably do. And if you say three, yes. I already got the four, and I got four yeses. Hell, ain't no sense going on down the rest of them. You know what I mean? I knew then about missing work and all this crap, you know, and the hell I put people through, the hell I put myself through, and I don't know how I was successful, but see, the first step always haunted me a little bit, that second part of it, because to me, my life was pretty manageable, you know. I owned a couple, three houses, owned a bunch of cars. I never slept under a bridge, and the only time I drink Mad Dog 2020 is when I had nothing else to drink. You know, so that couldn't be me. When I came here that night at the men's group, I stood right over there on that wall, and people were talking about how much time they had, how much, what happened between that last drink and all this stuff, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, so you don't drink, so what do? And so he said, we had to do the big, Joe Lewis used to sit over here, and he was the first one to talk. My troubles will go away when they bury me. But until then, I pray not to have that cigarette or drink. So I kept reading those 12 steps. I went back to work, talked to my buddy. He said, you just go take care of you. I'll take care of the business. You won't miss a lick. You just take care of you. See, everybody knew that I was either a drunk or whatever. And my anger, I was just an angry human being since the time I was 8 years old up until that date. That's how I dealt with life. I came here. I sat on that wailing wall for 12 days. And I came to about every meeting there was here at NAVA. And I finally convinced myself I could do those steps because Joe kept saying, if you can't do the 12 steps, you're going to have a problem with this program. I just didn't want to be another failure in my life. there. All this management of my business and all this kind of stuff, I was a failure in life when it came to me because I could look in that mirror and I hated that person that reflected back to me. So the 12th night, I come up here to sit down, and I was all fired up to pick up that white chip. All of a sudden, about two or three people got up. They all had about two or three years, and they were all coming up to get another white chip. And I don't know who was speaking, who was talking. And I said, do you mean to tell me that this doesn't work? That in two or three years, I'm going to be back out there where I am now? Five guys met me at that door, and they said, no. You never have to take another drink if you don't want to. This is how we did it. So I picked up that white chip. I'd already read every literature piece of paper in Nava because of Jimmy. And this is my home, is Nava. I've made a lot of mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've made a lot of mistakes before I got here, and I'll probably make a lot more mistakes before I leave. But when your 16-year-old son standing on the steps of your home, and you come in about 11 o'clock, bouncing off the cars, and he says to you, Dad, why do you keep coming home? We don't want you here. And I said, because I own the place. Good thinking. And he meant it. My wife didn't want me no more. The kids don't want me no more. But I own the place. 1992, when I got sober, all of a sudden something, a miracle started happening. Because right prior to this, for the last year and a half of that time, I was going to work about 8 o'clock in the morning, but I got up at 4:30 every morning, the wife and I would get up. She'd go into the shower, and I'd go in the refrigerator, give me a beer, give me a shot of Daniels or something, because I started getting these little shakes. And I'd drink that beer or that shot before she got out, wash the glass out, pour the coffee, drink it, wash my mouth out so she didn't know it, and it seemed to calm me so I could go on about my day. I didn't get drunk every time I drank, but believe me, I drank 7 days a week. I'd go home at night. The lights would all be off. The wife would be in bed by 8:30, 9 o'clock. I'd be sitting with the TV so low nobody could hear it, in the dark, drinking, feeling sorry for myself. What happened? How did this happen to me? How can I lose the business? How can I lose these kids? How can I? What the hell? Don't they know who I am? No. Because I didn't know who the hell I was. So I tell you newcomers this. Every one of us goes through a certain period of time in our lives, and we wind up right here in certain cases. The drink to me was a savior for a long, long, long time. Without it, I probably shot myself a long time ago. Like I said, it made me be anybody. I'd go into a strange bar, I could be a doctor, a lawyer, whatever they were talking in discussion, I could fit right in. I wanted to be these people. I wanted to be anybody but me. And that's a hell of a thought. To want to be somebody else. Anybody. It didn't matter to me. But that first 6 months and a year in this program, it's a tough one. Joe always pounded my head. Now, I'm going to let you know real quick. I didn't pick Joe Lewis to be my sponsor. Jimmy did. Claude, this is your new sponsor. This is your sponsor. I said, that man can't even hear me. He was over here, and I was by the door, and he walked over and said, I got a thing on the telephone that I can volume up, and I can hear every word you're saying. I said, well, he did pretty good. If I just said that whispering, he heard it all the way over there. Joe was known as a big book thumper. And we read that big book, and we read that big book, and we fought tooth and nail to do these steps. I didn't want to do this, but then don't do it and see what happens. All right. What page are you on? 62. Read it. Now, I had to go to the bathroom real quick. Hell, I had to go find a damn big book, turn to page 62, and start reading. He said, you don't have to read it. I know what it says. That's how I became to realize just how important the message is, from the doctor's opinion to the 164 pages, and that was it. Never read a story in the back of the book. I had a story of my own, and that's what I've been going through this last 2 weeks when they told me, they asked me to come up here. And that always bothered me because it took me back to that past I've been trying to bury for years. Because I get in, should have, could have, and would have. And the newcomer, you stay out of that frame of mind because that's a killer. That's when the resentments come up, and most of the resentments are right back at me. What I've learned in this program is that people love me. A lot of them knew my story. A lot of them knew what I did. They just didn't care. You're here. You're sick, and you got to get well. I don't have a disease as far as, and this is my opinion, I have not a disease. I have a dis-ease of the mind. I still think drinking in my world is in a place that I can't control. How many times have I said, well, if this would happen, if that would happen, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden a committee starts up here. I'd have to get drunk if you listen to this committee, believe me. But I've learned to be, over a number of years, seemingly hopeless, happy, joyous, and free. And this is the truth. I work with a lot of young people. Because I think young people is the backbone of AA today. I want you to keep coming back and hopefully you hear something, some kind of hope, because it's all, I didn't have any hope when I got here. Now that's all I got is hope. I hope that tomorrow will be better than today. And it's better tomorrow than it is today, but I'm going to be in a pretty good place. But first I had to stop drinking. I didn't have the halfway houses. I didn't have the resorts to go to. I had a little two-bedroom house in Ackworth, Georgia, empty. And when I leave here, after the 8 o'clock meeting, take me to 9:30 to get home, I had to be home by myself all night, thinking this thing through. And I did a lot of thinking. And Joe knew it. Joe would call me, what page, John? He'd get me right back in a big boat. Don't worry, this too shall pass. I used to hate that phrase.
This too shall pass.
Well, when? How?
You'll know it when it happens. Well, you're full of information. Then this one clown gets up one day and says, you know, if you don't take that first drink, you can't get drunk. I said, boy, listen, this is brilliance.
First drink never bothered me. It was that 15th or 20th one always got me.
All these little sayings, you know, you laugh at them, but to me, they're true. They kept telling me to come back. I've never been told to come back anywhere in my life. I tell you, once I went through a bar, if they didn't know me, if I didn't half own the damn thing, I wasn't allowed in there. That same son of mine was here on my first birthday. Dick Kiki was sitting over here. Mr. Thompson. I don't know if Fred was here or not. A few other ones were here. And he said, I'm so glad you found this. Because my son had joined AA about 2 years prior to that. He was about 20 years old. And Dick Hickey said, it didn't surprise me you're getting your one-year chip. You've worked hard doing it. And I think I did. Went to my grandmother that night, all full of piss and vinegar. Boy, my chest is way out there. Slapped myself on the back, short at middle of that medallion. She says, what's that? I says, what you get when you don't have a drink for a year? She looked at me and said, well, what happens if you hadn't had one in 84 years? I said, sainthood, you know. Most loving and caring woman I've ever, you know, ever known. And I know what unconditional love is. Because she showed it to me every time she saw me. And so she's seen me in my worst times or best times. I take AA like this, like I did with her. I was 3 or 4 years old, I'd be running around on a farm, and I'd cut my toe or bash my knee. And she'd pick me up, wash it off, sit me in a rocking chair, and rock me for about an hour until the pain went away, telling me all the time how much she loved me. When I came to AA, when I was down and beaten down, and no other man could ever beat me to, AA takes me into their hearts and their program for 1 hour. And I get that peace, and then I know I'm going to be okay. That's what AA means to me. I can tell you what to do, how to do it, and all this kind of stuff. But I take this very seriously. I pissed off a lot of people in these rooms, believe me, and I've made a lot of amends. But one thing I don't joke about that 12-step program. I've seen a lot of people come in here and go back out and die while they're out there. It's a deadly disease. Why I was fortunate enough to live through all that, I don't know. I've been shot at, cut, been in jails. Don't know. Nor do I question anymore, but I know how I got here. It's when I said a prayer, God help me. Next thing I knew, I was driving to Atlanta, Georgia, to go to my first AA meeting. And I was privileged to meet a lot of people in these rooms for the last 16 years. Now, I don't have 16 years sobriety. 2004, just celebrated 11 years, a little over 11 years, and I decided that I think I'll go have a drink. Because my sponsor, who I loved so much, it wasn't funny, died. And I couldn't talk to him anymore. I quit coming to these meetings. I got back into self-pity, and I mean self-pity. I just, well, we got a six-pack of beer, normal thing to do, turn it up just like I never left it. Stayed out there for 6 months. And one day I met Bud over at Fuzzy's. I walked in, ordered two beers, and he come over and sat down beside me. He said, Claude, he said, the only way I could get sober is I had to get some shit out of my life. And I knew he was right. That night I got the crap out of my life. Said a couple of prayers, came back here the next morning, and it was just like I never left this place. The same people were here, and they welcomed me back with open arms. They never said, why'd you go out? Why don't you do this? Why? We don't know why we go back out. You know, these slips or it's going out getting drunk has got nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous gives us a life if we want it. There's only a few things that we have to change. That's everything about ourselves, one thing. We have to get to know ourselves. We have to forgive ourselves, and we have to depend on our power greater than ourselves to do all these things, because for years I tried it. I don't think I'll drink today. 4:30, I still open that refrigerator. 3:30 in the afternoon, I'm still stopping off at the Hindu place to get my drinks before I go home. And every day, I swear I wouldn't do it again. Told my wife I was sorry so damn many times. She just finally told me, so I know you are. It's amazing. 5 years, my son came to my fifth birthday anniversary. He's a very quiet talker, big man. He got at me, so I don't say much in meetings, but I'll tell you this. I hope my sons love me as much as I love my father. And he's the same son that told me he didn't want to see me no more. It's the same son that we used to wrestle around in the front yard drunk. The same son that went through the same thing I did, telling me he loved me more than anything in the world. And he told him, he grew up, he said, all I want to do is thank Alcoholics Anonymous for letting my father find what he's always been looking for. And that's what I've always been looking for, is a little peace. Getting back to that first meeting, you know, that first week or two was amazing, man. I wasn't kissing Mrs. Kohler every morning. I wasn't hungover. My head didn't hurt. My back didn't hurt. My hands didn't have the cuts on them anymore. Didn't have the broken noses anymore. Man, this is a miracle. And all I did was put down that drink. And through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have to pick it up. But I went back out there because I wanted to. That's the only thing I can tell you. Anybody goes back out and tries again cannot usually come up with a reason for doing it. It says that in the big book. And I can't tell you why I did it. It just seemed like the natural thing to do. Even though for almost 12 years, I never touched this stuff. I was in there, I could quote the big book. I knew just about everything about that big book. I could do how it works without even looking at it. And all that did was tell me, when you know something that well, you better start doing it all over because you're getting to take it for granted. And I think that's what I did. Today, I still read the big book every day. Couple paragraphs. I still talk to sponsorees on the phone.
I still talk to a sponsor on the phone, and I still come to these meetings. My life is not perfect, but I'm going to tell you something. It's a hell of a lot better than it was August the 4th of 1992. A day I said I never want to live through again, and all of a sudden I went back out at 10 and a half, 11 and a half years. I just celebrated my 3 years. I remember when Troy was here that day. I knew he was hurting. I knew he wanted to talk a lot about what happened. And I just said, Troy, just chill out. Just take it easy. Because he wanted to fly up here and get one of these white chips. I know for one thing, the chips don't keep me sober. It's working this program and doing what you people tell me to do every day. Get on my knees and humble myself. Don't pick up a drink no matter what goes down the bar. Come in here and be peaceful for an hour. And listen to people. Harry, Fred, all these people with numbers of years that's been doing this over and over and over and over again. And they still do it. Fred, he's got a lot of years. I see him up here almost every day. Brooks over there, he'd be lost if he didn't come here. And Marge is glad he does. You know, but these people are my friends. If I said, I'm having a problem with this feeling or whatever, how's that working for you? Well, I ain't working too damn good, but then get away from me. It's simple. But it's so hard because it's complicated. The program Alcoholics Anonymous, those 12 steps are not out to hurt me. I looked at that 4-step, and all I could hear was people, oh, God, I got to do the 4-step, oh, God. I thought it was dumb. I was going to die after doing the 4-step the way these people talked. But then I did it. And I felt a sense of relief that all the world was not against me. That I had a big part in all the damn things that went on in my life. I drank a long time. And foolish of me to think when I was 25 years old, I was out there having a good time. But I was. But we step over a fine line when we're drinking. I was a heavy drinker for a long time, but I stepped over that line to be an alcoholic when I couldn't put it down and leave it down, and then I knew I had a problem. I never wanted to quit drinking because I'd always say, I ain't quit any time. I don't have to drink. It's because I want to. My mother, my father, my wife, my kids, my brother, everybody in my family just knew I was going to die an alcoholic. I was stubborn. It was my way or the highway. Didn't care. And I was going to do it my way. Then you bring me into a program that my way doesn't work. I was sitting up here one day, chairing a meeting, and that's year or two sober boy, and I was telling him what I thought was wrong with the big book. Well, Fred Cameron said, Claude, you don't have to rewrite it, just read it. We already had a couple of people rewrite it. The mistakes I make in this program is, when I first got here, I was coming here for a lot of times, different days, just to see who was here. Downstairs used to be full. We used to have pool tournaments. We used to have the little restaurant open. We used to have a blast here. I mean, this place was packed every day. And things changed. NAV is still, to me, the number one clubhouse for Alcoholics Anonymous there is in the city of Atlanta. It's known all over the state. When I go to Macon, they say, where are you GSR of? And I say, to 130, think it through, sober at NAVA. And people know about NAVA. I hear Jesse say once in a while, we see a lot of empty seats. It's because, you know why? There's going to be a lot more people come through these doors. I have to be careful what I say in meetings because I don't want people to get the wrong idea. This is to save your life. In my opinion, will get your ass in a lot of trouble. It got me in a lot of trouble. So when I talk in the meetings, I tell you how I feel, and I tell you as closely, as honestly as possible I can do. I like to come into the solution of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because that's precisely how we did it. The doctor's opinion told me exactly why I drink, because I love the effect of the drink. Never liked the damn taste of it. It always hang up here until about 3 or 4. Then I could just drink it straight and just love that feeling. I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to be somebody else anymore. I'm Claude Smith, and I'm proud of it today. You might not be, but I am. I picked up my third chip on June the 1st. I tell you just like it is, it didn't impress a lot of people here, but it impressed the shit out of my kids. I'm what they're at now. Because they knew I was back home where I should be. Every night, I'll talk to my oldest son. How's Nava doing? Still doing the dinners? You're still having the picnics? You guys doing this? Because, I mean, that's all I talked about for years was Nava. Man, this is my home. I don't like people knocking this place. I'll knock it, but I don't want you knocking it. You know, we have a picnic or cookout, or whatever you call it, Friday afternoon. That's what Nava does for us. They'll throw the hot dogs and the hamburgers on downstairs. You're welcome to come. You've got no other place to go. If you got a couple dollars, you give it. If you don't, you don't leave here hungry. You come here so you have a place to go without going to a damn bar or a drug dealer, wherever them people are. I don't know what they are. I never met them. It gives me a place to come to every day. I think every day we've got the 7:30 to 9 o'clock, I don't know, 11, 1:30, 5:45, 8 o'clock. Then we got seance meetings at 10 o'clock in the other room. You know, I can do that. You can't. This is my home. I love Tim. I love Troy. I love everybody in this room because you know why? You're here for one reason only, to have a good tomorrow, maybe a little bit better tomorrow. So whatever you're going through, trust me. This too shall pass. Sometimes we have to do a little work on it. We have to get on our knees. We have to pray to a power greater than I am. Then the next thing I'd have to do is I have to get up and do something about it. I can't read the big book and talk for an hour in this meeting and then go home and act like an idiot. I did that for years. I'd be in a truck by myself drinking a beer going home and say, boy, I'm going to be such a great father this weekend. I'm going to take my wife out. We're going to have a great time. Get home. What did I say? Let's go get his 12-pack. My thinking will get me all screwed up. Maybe it's my age. I don't know. But I'm in pretty good shape, mentally and physically. And I love this program because it's given me a new way of life that I can look upon myself a lot better than I used to. You couldn't trust me. I couldn't trust me. Who are you? I didn't even want to tell you my name. I changed my name a lot of times, especially when I was 17 and 18. All I can tell you is this thing works. Alcoholics Anonymous will change your life if you want it to be changed. If you don't, there's nothing I can say to you that you'll change. There's nothing I can say to you to make you get drunk. This is all an inside job. First and foremost, I am an alcoholic. I will never be able to drink like a normal human being. And that's a good thing because I cannot see just having two beers and then going home. Once I take that first one, the craving starts. Trust me, this is my experience. I took that first beer in my mouth in 2004. All I could think about was, when can I get the next one? When can I get the next one? When will this feeling change? And it just changed, but it always changed for worse. I don't go to jails anymore. I don't have deep down enemies anymore. I don't look over my shoulder anymore. I love this way of life. And I hope you come back until the day that you'll say, I love it. I love NABA. I love the people here. We have all the meetings in the world. It's kept clean. It's through contributions and memberships. For a mere $15, $25 a month, whatever you can afford, it keeps the doors open so others that may live. I remember some of those guys, and I've only been around here 16 years, the old Verns and so forth, who used to operate this place. And I can tell you, your life dreams will come true. Far more than you'll ever, ever expect it to. And all you have to do is, first of all, stop drinking. Second of all, get into some steps with somebody who's been through them many, many times. I don't mean a one-year wonder. I mean somebody that's got some time, who's been through that big book over and over and over again with plenty of experience. Do what they say. Argue if you want to, but you'll lose. And just keep coming back. Troy, congratulations on your 2 years. And congratulations on everybody in this room for today. I love each and every one of you. May God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you, Claude. We love you. Thank you very much.